big questions of technology and humanity, which actually I wanted to touch on in my own talk. So maybe I'll just sashay straight into that, using your question to bring it straight into the situation in Germany, which of course is, as we all know, the biggest economy in Europe, and the, you know, in some ways at the core of the European Union, together with France. And you know, Germany specifically now is in a situation of considerable lack of awareness about Chinese technology in the country and what's going on in terms of entering into buying up, controlling the technological systems of the future that we will all be living with and from. Some of you may know that Angela Merkel has made a preliminary decision to allow, i.e. to be agnostic about which technology vendor can be part of the new 5G to come, i.e. Chinese companies such as ZTE, such as Datong, such as Huawei can participate. And the criteria in Germany have been especially narrow and shallow in assessing the significance of this participation. And I'm afraid to me that a little bit reflects the mentality in Germany, which is very technological, it's very technical. And indeed, this decision was largely drawn up by two technical agencies of the German government, the Bundesnetzagentur, BNetzA, and the BSI, which is a cybersecurity agency, but which does not particularly consider political, strategic, or security issues when it reaches decisions. So there's been a big, pretty big pushback now in Germany, particularly among the, in the CDU, Merkel's own party, and you know, they seem to have won last Saturday a compromise from Merkel to allow the Bundestag to have a say in this 5G technology decision, who's allowed to supply 5G. That then raises the question of how well informed is the Bundestag, and there are major influencing issues from the CCP that are at work in Germany that I've been tracking. I started tracking in the spring. I published twice on it this year. We are not yet on top of these issues. We haven't done enough work. This stuff is just coming at us like an avalanche, really, and it's changing fast. So, you know, Germany is incredibly complicated in this issue, and it's got all kinds of economic, both perceived and real economic dependencies on China, which it has allowed to flourish. And these things are often taken as an excuse, in my opinion, although there is, of course, some reality to them, but as an excuse for inaction. Yeah, I think we need to sort of watch this space here when it comes to Germany and the 5G decision over the next weeks and months. We don't know when this Bundestag debate will take place. It hasn't been announced yet, but certainly people are watching it. And at the DGAP, I published together with my colleague Khan Sahin a piece about basically roundly criticizing the government's approach to 5G. Apart from anything else, you know, it came out of the Kanzleramt, and Merkel was specifically advised not to make this decision by her security services. So she's essentially ignoring her own intelligence agencies, which in a sort of a governmental and democratic environment is, to me, quite extraordinary. Just to step back a bit from that immediate Germany 5G issue, I think, you know, the situation that Andre presented is extraordinary, and it's chilling, and it makes me think, you know, how on earth did we even get here? Why are we in this situation today? And why are we so wrong-footed? And why are we so much fighting on the defensive when it comes to establishing basic principles such as human rights, the protection of dignity, autonomy, the individual, technology? You know, and to be able to look at that issue, I think we need to look at issues of technology, humanity, and to use a German word, you know, of what is the Menschenbild, the picture of the person, of humanity that we work with and that we live with and we believe in. And I think that, you know, this is obviously a very, very different one that exists in China today from one that exists in theory, for example, in Germany, although the actual connections between how you continue that positive, you know, based on the rights of humankind, etc., how you continue to protect that are very, very controversial at this moment. You know, the reality is that the CCP, and you know, I don't talk about China or the Chinese because I don't like it. I'm myself from Hong Kong. I've lived nearly 40 years of my life in China, and I dislike very strongly, racism is a reality in the world, and so I talk about the CCP. We're talking about a political system and not a people. So with these different political systems that are fighting and that through which technology is in some way a proxy of different values, you know, I think having just listened to Andre's very interesting talk about Xinjiang, I would also like to focus a little bit on Hong Kong, the uprisings there. And it's not a coincidence that one of the things that protesters in Hong Kong have been doing in the last months is tearing down electrical poles or telephone poles, which, or just lights, electrical lights on the streets, which are in effect smart city lights and have chips in them that are monitoring data, that are monitoring faces on the streets, this kind of thing. They're tearing them down, they're pulling apart the boxes with all the stuff in it and taking pictures of what they're finding inside, what the chips are, where they were manufactured. This is a very direct challenge to technological surveillance of a very dystopian kind. And that's a little bit, you know, where politics and technology are coming together very, very clearly in that one example in Hong Kong. So I just wanted to sort of pick that up a bit. To get back to specifically to Germany, because that's what I'm here to talk about, because I suppose what happens in Germany is inevitably going to have a big impact in Europe. I'd like to quote from, you know, building off Philip's presentation of the overall situation and Andre, yours of the specific situation in Xinjiang, I'd like to quote from an interview with the chairman of Huawei, Lin Zhengfei, in Shenzhen on November 6th between Ren and very prominent German media, including the big state broadcasters such as ZDF, the Zweite Deutsche Fernseher, in which the ZDF journalist, who's actually called Ulf Röller and is actually the brother of one of Merkel's absolutely closest advisors in the Chancellery in Berlin, asked the question of Ren Zhengfei, if you look at Europe and Germany, do you have some feeling that Europe, compared to China, is a continent which is in decline and China is a continent which is rising to become a superpower? Answer from Mr. Ren: Europe may need to change some of its business rules. Europe should be bolder in selling its products to China. Will Europe and China go to war? Of course not. Then why is Europe still sticking to the old rules of economic blockade? He's referring to military technology being sold to China after Tiananmen Square massacre. This was banned. Since the US doesn't sell these products to us, it's a great opportunity for Europe to rise. Why don't you seize this opportunity and fill the gap left by the US? In addition, with artificial intelligence, Germany will be able to shake off the constraints of labor laws and embrace explosive growth in the future. We have already built one factory in Weilheim in Germany, that's a Huawei factory, and one in Funabashi, Japan. These two factories can help us combine the strengths of both Japan and Germany and make high quality products. Then it will be impossible that customers don't buy from us. End quote. Now that's a really, to me, very, very interesting statement for all the things that are happening there, the inevitability of technology as it is being presented by Huawei to the German government media, the inevitability of Chinese technology. This is a very important issue we need to look at. Is it really inevitable? You know, we need to question some of our assumptions here very strongly. We need to think about paradigm changes because we are emerging from an old paradigm of cooperation with the CCP, where we believed that the CCP would change in a way that was amenable to sort of the world system, if you like. That's pretty much collapsed at this point. So we are looking at the need for new paradigms of understanding and of action. But, you know, above all, you know, this statement suggests that China, in fact, or the CCP, rather, to correct myself personally, what it really, I think, wants to do here is to kind of disconnect Europe from the US. And now we all know that in the age of Trump, that's perhaps not such an impossible proposition. And he sort of, you know, offers the economic incentive of being able to do massive business with Huawei, with the factory in Weilheim. And, you know, this is so here we have himself, the chairman of Huawei, making a very, very political argument to a country like Germany, to the technology industry in Germany, to all industry in Germany, really. You know, while at the same time, of course, always posing as just being a kind of like a simple handset maker and fiber optic cable layer and this kind of thing. So, you know, we just really, I think, need to pay attention to what Ren says when he does speak in this way. The factory in Weilheim, Germany is, I've done a little bit of looking into it, and it's actually a rather mysterious place. Huawei arrived, Weilheim is in Bavaria, and Huawei arrived there with a promise 2 years ago to create hundreds of jobs. So far, apparently, there have been 50 jobs created, and it's not actually a manufacturing point, it's a research and testing node. There's very little interaction between the factory in Weilheim and the local government. The local city government in Weilheim is very open. It has these meet the government days with big local businesses. As far as I understand, and this maybe needs to be updated, some of the reports are a bit old, Huawei hasn't participated in that open day yet. And, you know, it said that it would be up and running at the end of last year, the second half of 2018. We're now in the second half of 2019. It's still happening at a very, very low-key level. So I think that in terms of industrial policy, again, this points to the issue of, you know, to what extent do the promises that Chinese technology companies or other companies make when they arrive in Europe, to what extent do they actually materialize? This is a very, very important point that we have to investigate quite carefully. My sense from looking at other situations in Germany, for example, the situation in Duisburg, which is in the west of the country, where the Duisburg city government is building a so-called Rhine cloud with Huawei that will connect into the state, the city administration, that will run the essential services of the city, such as water, gas, and public transportation, is that big promises are made, and then they often really don't materialize. But what does happen during that whole process is that the company in question, be it Huawei, be it another one, establishes a kind of a foothold in the city and invests elsewhere in the region. So, if you like, this is you know, this is strategy. This is industrial business strategy, and the actual promised event in the place that was the landing pad, if you like, for the Chinese technology or other company in question may not be the real target of what they're actually up to. So, and again, this is stuff that can be pretty straightforwardly proven by a careful monitoring of events, news reports, interviews with actors on the ground, company records, that kind of thing. It's just that we, you know, we're basically in Europe, we're really not doing it very much. That's really a great weakness. I wanted to just then also go back to the some of the forward-looking issues in Germany in terms of its rather naive appreciation of the situation with Chinese technology. Tonight, in fact, in I think it's in Berlin, the Handelsblatt Research Institute, which is an economic research institute sort of partly run by Handelsblatt, which is one of the leading newspapers there, is having an event which is sponsored by Huawei. It's called the Master Plan 2030. And in it, Huawei Germans who work for Huawei, like the chief technology officer and many other people, will discuss with leading economists in Germany, such as Bernd Rürup, some of you may know the name, about where, and perhaps a little bit at this point, we could put up the second slide, which is just exactly just that one. Thank you so much. So that's the event that's on tonight. About, you know, how Huawei will somehow need to be involved in bringing forward Germany's technologization, 5G, Internet of Things future. Again, it's this narrative that somehow Huawei is, and other Chinese technology companies are somehow inevitable and necessary for the future of Europe. And You know, Europe, of course, does have very good technology companies. And in fact, the vast majority of what's happened to date in China with technology is based off really significant transfer, technology transfer from the United States, from Canada, from Europe to China. This is a very old program that's been running since at least 1949. It's policy. And, you know, so again, to challenge perhaps this attitude in Europe that somehow China is essential for Europe's future economic success, I'd really like to put that out as a proposition for people to think about whether or not it's actually true. Because I think that most people in Europe don't realize how much China needs Europe, rather than the other way around. You know, in places like Duisburg that are well in with these huge technology companies from China, you will hear this narrative that somehow, literally, that 90% of Duisburg's economic future lies with China. 90%. You know, for a town on the western edge of Germany that has the biggest inland port in Europe, it has great assets, it's got amazing transportation connections, it's got a highly educated local population, enormously innovative. And yet, from all sides, from German media, from the local Duisburg city government, from the Chinese technology companies themselves, we get this message, no. 90% of Duisburg's economic future lies in China. Again, where is this narrative coming from? Why do people believe it so broadly? And why are we not questioning it? Why are we not challenging it? What we really need here, actually, as this paradigm of cooperation is collapsing with some of the political events that Andre detailed so wonderfully, is you know, ourselves to rethink this received wisdom, I think, that's very powerful here in Europe right now. The US is doing it. The US is starting to rethink it. We've got this word decoupling on the table. A lot of people really dislike that word, decoupling. They find it too extreme. I would actually suggest that the real decoupling has already begun a long time ago in China. China has cut itself off from the globe, from the world, from the internet, from all kinds of interactions, manners of interacting economically, academically, in a scholarly level, journalistically. I know I was a journalist in China for 14 years, 17 in total. You know, the real decoupling has come from Beijing, and it started really a long time ago. So what we're now doing is sort of realizing what's going on. And then, you know, but again, you know, the CCP is very good at shaping this narrative about how it's, you know, always the fault of other people. It's your fault that you have a different opinion. It's your fault that you want to decouple. We really need to question some of these things very deeply. And I've probably gone on too long. I did have another couple images that I wanted to show you very briefly to, this is a nice one. This connects to Andre's talk about what's happening in Xinjiang, in the sense that this addresses directly issues such as how people are treated by the Chinese party state. This is a guy. Allegedly, it's from Twitter. It was posted by somebody called Jerry Shi, whom I know, who's a very good journalist for the Washington Post in Beijing. I trust his reporting. And he says that he found it, I think on Weibo, was it, or WeChat? It was on WeChat. It was said to be a picture of a guy who criticized the local police. Easily done, happens easily. Police often have to do things that need to be criticized. This is what happened to him. They put him in a tiger chair. You know, we can't see the full image there, but actually both his hands are in these shackles. And the chair, I mean, it literally looks like, it is a torture instrument, right? It's like something from the medieval times when people were kind of put up like that on the rack and then turned around. You know, you're like young, who's here in your town square? I mean, he experienced these kinds of things probably before he was burned at the stake. But my point being that Europe has a rich medieval tradition of torture still going on today. And, you know, this is why people are so fundamentally so concerned about Chinese technology and the nexus of the party state and the political control and the Menschenbild, the idea of humanity that underlines our, you know, the society that we want to live in and how we're going to integrate that successfully, happily, and safely with technology that's coming at us. Perhaps it's a little bit going back at this point, but the first image I thought also worth showing. One should, you know, this is something that I've been working on all year. It's in Germany, it's in Trier, the birthplace of Marx. That's, of course, the statue of Marx. The lady there is Li Xiaolin, who is the, she's a blue blood of the Chinese Communist Party, the daughter of a very early general, Li Xianyan, who was also, I believe, president at one point. But anyway, the point is his party connections were absolutely solid gold. And she's now the head of one of the fundamental international organizations for building ties between foreign countries and the Communist Party in Beijing. It's the CPAFFC, the Chinese People's, no, it's the Chinese People's Friendship, help me out here. It's just so many acronyms. CPAFFC, Chinese People's Association for Friendship with Foreign Countries. Thank you, Martin. CPAFFC. And she's been enormously successful. The CPAFFC has been enormously successful in Germany. They have, since 1993, built up a network, just one network we're talking about here. There are many more in Germany, of 37 civil society-based organizations, run, staff, set up by Germans, approached by the CPAFFC in 1993. I documented this in a paper that Synopsis published in September, and essentially turned into being a multiplier for the CCP's voice in Germany. They have connections to the highest level of government. They participate in technology events in Beijing. They're in the BRI. They were the ones who just had their annual general meeting in Duisburg in early November with the Chinese Chinese representatives present from the embassies and also Huawei. So in a way, it's terribly complicated, but in a way, it's also extremely simple. You know, the fundamental points are simple. There's a lot of detail, but what we have to do is sort of get our head around what the fundamental points are and how they all hang together and how they are influencing and impacting in Europe. Thank you very much.